It was a break for most of us in fire and smoke intensity this summer, but memories of the last few intense and smoky fire seasons have many people considering many methods for reducing the danger of wildfire. Our next guest wants us to consider horses for part of the solution. William Simpson lives on rugged land in the Soda Mountain Wilderness area, and he proposes putting wild horses in places where they do not now live so that they can munch down some of the smaller fuels that can kindle larger fires. It's an idea he calls Wild Horse Fire Brigade. William Simpson's in the studio. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Jeff.
So tell us about your training and experience and what you've been doing to develop this idea.
Well, I grew up on a working ranch with domestic horses and was basically urged to go to Oregon State. I had the grades and the aptitude, according to our local veterinarian, to be a doctor. So I was going there with the idea of being a physician. Ended up, long story short, with a degree in flight technology. And then retired into the wilderness and found myself living among wild horses and engaging in an observational study as basically an embedded symbiont like Jane Goodall did with the chimps, and starting to learn a lot of things that I didn't realize. I kind of came in to the whole environment with a rancher's perspective. If anything, I was biased against horses from growing up in the FFA. We called horses, you know, hay burners. And because we were raising cattle and sheep, we wanted our forage to go to cattle and sheep and so we could pay the mortgage. But so if anything, I came into it a little bit biased against the horses.
Do you have any domestic horses too, or you just live among the wild horses?
No, not anymore. No, we just live among the wild horses.
So what led to the, I mean, it's one thing to get some knowledge of what it's like to live around wild horses. It's another thing to decide, you know, these guys could be the key to a strategy for reducing wildfire danger. How'd you get from one to the other?
Well, before I went to college and during the summers, I worked as a logger. And, of course, occasionally we fought little fires back then. In the 60s and 70s, we had a much larger deer population in Southern Oregon and in California. So the native species herbivory did a fairly good job of keeping the grass and fuel, which they call one-hour class fuels, down. That's the kindling and the tinder that not only ignites these fires but carries the fire to the heavier fuels. And from that experience and that paradigm of growing up and dealing with logging and forestry and so forth, and then moving, retiring into the wilderness, and then observing the lack of deer and then how the wild horses in our wilderness area were taking up that slack. And especially empirically, we saw the Klamathon fire come up right to the edge of our ranch and then stalled as a result of its inability to spot over into areas where the wild horses had grazed. Because in our wilderness area where we are, we have quite a robust population of predators, apex predators ranging from coyotes all the way up to mountain lions and bears. And with the shortage of deer, the horses are basically our only native species herbivory. So those wild horses did a really good job, and the fire had trouble spotting over. And I attribute not only the excellent work of CAL FIRE and ODF firefighters, but also with the fact that the herbivory actually proved out to be working.
So you're talking about in places where there are not many deer. I mean, just from casual observation, particularly of accidents and being in the city of Ashland, it seems like there's no shortage of deer in the Rogue Valley. So what kinds of places would you want to put horses where you see a shortage of?
Right. Well, let me set the stage, because you did bring up something that is a bit confusing for most people. The anecdotal data of the deer that you see in town is not the situation, generally speaking, in the wilderness. The deer move into the cities because they know the lions don't like people, and they use the humans and our
activity. So they go where
activity.
The lions aren't.
Exactly. They're not. You know, they know how to survive. So, you know, in California, we're down about 1.5 million deer since 1970, and I'm citing statistics from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. In Oregon, we're down about 150,000 deer. In fact, I just pulled some data last night about the mule deer in Oregon. And in Oregon, the mule deer, the objective was to manage and maintain a population of about 337,000 mule deer. And they've only managed to maintain about a third of that objective in Oregon. So we've got about 30% of the mule deer that they'd like to have. So we're talking about a real depletion in our native species herbivory. That is very important, Jeff, because each deer eats about 7 pounds of grass and brush a day on average. And so when you're looking at about, in the neighborhood of a depletion just in our two states of about 2 million deer, it's about 2.5 million tons of annual grass and brush that's no longer being grazed. And so in terms of wild land distribution of that kind of fuel load, you're looking at maybe a tenth or maybe at the most a quarter ton per acre to give you an idea of that kind of grass and brush in a commercial hay production operation, dry hay production, where you have irrigation and so forth, averages in the United States about 2.5 tons per acre. In the wilderness, you're talking maybe one-tenth of a ton per acre distribution. So that kind of distribution of annual grass and brush is really serious. And instead of trying to mitigate sources of ignition, which we can't control, lightning, cigarettes, chains dragging, campfires, et cetera, the thing we can't control is the amount of tinder and fuel that cause these fires. So what I'm talking about is we have all these horses that are costing us allegedly, they've said up to $1 billion over the life of these horses that are currently in storage by the BLM. Instead of maintaining that kind of a tax burden on people, to take some of these horses, including the ones that allegedly will be rounded up and are currently being rounded up, and put them back into their native environments where they were originally displaced from. We have areas on the West Coast here, and this is my plan, Wild Horse Fire Brigade, applies primarily to the West Coast. You have other topographies and situations in the middle states and so forth that are different. But out here, we have generally about 10 million acres of remote wilderness where you cannot do livestock production. It's very ill-suited because of the cost of transportation, management, and then predation. So in these areas, the horses are well advised because we have a paleontological record, and paleoecology is the new perspective for setting basically a template for how we rewild an area, because it's very difficult to look back over the last 300 years with all the impact of man. So putting horses into areas where we know horses did exist before, like on the Soda Mountain Wilderness, right here in the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument, there are horse fossils. We know horses have existed here for a very long time. So in these remote areas, the horses can do a very good job, and they're very cost-effective.
William Simpson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a rancher and the creator of an idea called Wild Horse Fire Brigade. We're fleshing out the details right now, the idea being that if you let wild horses loose on the landscape in some places, they can munch down some of those fuels like grasses and brush that would flare up, and or at least help fires flare up in the first place upon ignition. Join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So do you have ideas for, would these primarily be east of the Cascades? Would there be some placements west of the Cascades in wilderness areas?
Well, we don't have a lot of horses. One forester commented to me to just make up for the missing herbivory from our deer that are gone, we would need to have about 500,000 horses available. We do not have 500,000 horses in the entire United States, at least not wild horses. So basically, to relieve the BLM of what they consider to be a problem, and to free up more grazing in areas where ranchers obviously want to produce livestock for the 97% of Americans that want their meat products and meat at economic rates, we can move these horses into these areas. We have approximately, there's somewhere around 60,000 wild horses that are ranging right now. The BLM wants to take that down to about 27,000 horses nationally. So we're talking about putting these horses in western remote wildernesses.
Okay, so remote wildernesses. What keeps them there, though?
Wild horses orbit resources. They just don't wander around. They're not migratory animals per se. They basically orbit resources of water, minerals, and grazing. So if you put them into an area where they have these things, they stay there. Our horses have been up there on the monument where we are, have been there for centuries. Dr. Powers talks about the horses in this area being here, according to his knowledge, for a very, very long time. So, and we don't see them walking around downtown Ashland or Medford or Yreka. They stay up in the mountains there.
We have an off-air question from Chris in Medford who wants to know, A, what is causing the deer population decrease, and B, how do you define a wild horse?
Okay, well, first of all, The deer population has been studied by, in California more recently, I actually looked at that last night to see what the latest information was, and there's a published study by a scientist named Don Neal with the U.S. Forest Service, and he found that 49% of all the fawns that are taken by mountain lions. We're seeing across the board that the predation, there's an aggregate of things, of course, but half of the deer are being taken by lions. And that's based on their study, which was a fairly large study. It was done from 1970 to 1985, an interagency study in cooperation with Cal Fish and Wildlife. So predation is a big part. Now we have chronic wasting disease also affecting it.
But not in Oregon yet, right?
Not in Oregon yet, but it's in, last I heard, 27 states. Of course, you have some hunting. Last time I looked at that in California, it was something like 57,000 animals were taken in Oregon and California. So, and then part two of his question. So wild horses are horses that have been on the landscape. You know, there's the BLM uses the term basically initially when the 1971 Free Roaming Wild Boar Horse Protection Act came along. You had horses on the landscape, and the horses under their management, they like to call wild horses. It's sort of a defined term. Mm-hmm. The term feral horse is a human construct. Domestic horses are obviously highly inbred. We've been breeding horses for four millennia. So 4,000 years of inbreeding, you've got horses out there that have various phenotypes that were desirable color, characteristics, shape, size, et cetera. Wild horses can be traced back genetically. In fact, Michael Hofreiter, a geneticist from Europe, looked at Elambre from the Alaska permafrost, a horse that was found with a mammoth, and basically said that it was the same horse as Ecobalus. So these, the horses today that have those gene lines are truly native species wild horses.
But they came from with the conquistadors and the explorers.
Well, no, that's not that. I mean, that was some of the old science. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when Jane Goodall did her study in the late 50s and 60s, that was the same period the science came along that basically provided us with the 1971 Act. We know in those last 48 years, science has come forward a long, long way. So the paleoecology and the paleontology today tells us that we're now finding horse fossils that are much younger than before when they were talking about the extinction event supposedly post
of the native North American.
Yeah, we
horses.
Now know there were pre-Columbian horses because there's been professors up in Canada who have actually looked at some of the French explorers' journals talking about Native Americans who are using horses to hunt buffalo in the early 1600s. Now, this is an advanced technology. When you have 10-foot spears and points and the training of the horses, they've basically extrapolated back how long would it take to develop the technology, and they're coming up with Native Americans using horses in the North American continent in the 1400s. So that predates the Vikings and the arrival of the Spaniards. So there were some horses remaining, and the science is now pointing heavily to that. But they were also reintroduced.
William Simpson's idea is called Wild Horse Fire Brigade, the idea being to let wild horses loose in wilderness areas and let them munch down some of the landscape to reduce some of the smaller fuels that lead to larger fires. So clearly you're trying to make a case that you're putting things into wilderness areas that have been in wilderness areas in the past. Now, I wonder about the other part of this. So you could satisfy some of the wilderness groups, some of them anyway, I suspect. Now, what about the wild horse groups? Have you run this idea past them?
Well, certainly, yeah. We have quite a bit of support for Wild Horse Fire Brigade from some of the leading advocates for wild horses and burros. Rewilding native species horses in America it just makes good ecological sense, and the paleoecology supports that thesis, as well as the new science that's emerging. Wild horses are unique grazers. They have one stomach. Invasive species, cattle and sheep, have four stomachs. So if you put them into a wilderness area where you have threatened or endangered flora, they will devour the seeds and they will strip the land of that flora. Wild horses don't do that. They have a single stomach, and the seeds that they eat actually get redistributed onto the landscape and their droppings, which are actually very desirable for seeds. They're basically humus that it's added to the soil with the seed base. And I've got in my study, which is published at WHFB.US, Wild Horse Fire Brigade, WHFB.US. Mm-hmm. And there's a study there, and I actually have photographs of horse droppings where all kinds of native plants and herbs are springing forth from those droppings.
So what do you do now with the idea? Where do you take it from here? Have you run it past members of Congress? Have you you know, given this to the BLM and so forth?
Yeah, we're trying to get some of our local legislators to introduce a bill to begin a pilot study to introduce a given number, depending on the carrying capacity of our local wilderness areas, Six Rivers, Calmeopsis, and even the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument, a reasonable number of native species wild horses from the BLM. They would be rounded up in a humane fashion as a family unit, as a social unit, not by helicopter, but baited in, and then the families would be relocated and relocated in population densities that are extremely low so that there would be plenty of time to study already what we've proven in my study, which is they're very beneficial to the landscape.
Well, and then, so the question is, so the population control, would this become an issue? Because it's a big issue right now, even among groups that do favor having wild horses free on the range.
It is an issue, and it's only an issue in the herd management areas and in the herd areas where you are commingled cattle and sheep, because for the past 300 years, ranchers have had to eliminate predation to get the maximum return on investment for their time. In other words, you can't make money if you have predators eating your calves and your lambs. You have to preserve those. So they've basically eliminated the native species apex predators. And when you do that, you also eliminate the native species apex predators for horses, because lions, bears, coyotes, and wolves all eat horses, every one of them. In fact, the BLM presented a report to Congress on a sustainable wild horse and burro program that had basically it was just an absolute misrepresentation that wild horses have no natural predators. Now, that is just a canard. They absolutely, every apex predator in North America eats horses. But in these particular areas, it is a problem because they've removed their natural predators. Where we're talking about putting these horses back into the wilderness, the natural predators are in full, robust population density, so they naturally control. I mean, natural selection and evolution has had this problem solved a long time.
Nature red in tooth and claw.
Exactly.
Yeah, we keep the population down. Wild Horse Fire Brigade is the concept. William Simpson, the creator. It's at whfb.us and also linked from our website at jeffexchange.org. William Simpson, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.